listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to this episode of LA Talk Radio, Your Ultimate Life, the show to help you create the life you want, life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Today, I've got a guest, Esther Wildenberg, who is a fabulous guest, a miracle worker of sorts, and all kinds of stuff. She wrote this beautiful book, The Undermined Soul. And I get the chance to interview a lot of people who have written books and who have all kinds of methods. And I'm going to dig into some of her stuff today. Esther, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad you're here. So for those of you that follow me regularly, she is a guest on the podcast that'll come out in a little while. So a month or so from now, she'll be a guest on the podcast. And you should hear that episode too, because we're not going to talk about any of the same stuff today. So, Esther, I want to start with a question. This book, The Undermined Soul, I love the picture on the front. I'll show that again for people to see it. You know, this persona there with wings and so forth. Can you tell me why that visual is important? What is that trying to share?
It's the rising phoenix, you know, coming from the ashes and stepping into the light and in your divine power and doing the things you're here destined to do.
The rising phoenix. Those of you that follow know I use the phoenix all the time. And I love it. It's one of the logos, a central piece of our logo. So I love it. I agree with it. And rising from the ashes doesn't mean that ashes always have to be terrible, but they sometimes are. But the point is the rising, the rebirth. And if you follow the real legend of the phoenix, you know that that happens more than once in the lifetime of a phoenix. And I don't know if it's for sure, but phoenixes may be essentially immortal and they just continue that cycle of rebirth and rising. And we don't get the joy of being immortal, at least not in this incarnation. Anyway, so I have a question for you. I had a chance to interview earlier today a lady who has had a set of trauma on her own, etc., and she developed her own particular set of skills and offers a certain kind of energy work and so forth. And you hear that a lot in the space of personal development. But it made me wonder, if you had to describe the essential, like she called hers the center point and talked about the Van Allen belts in the earth and the center point of our physical radiation, et cetera, et cetera. If you had to describe, I don't want to say the most important, because sometimes it's hard to say, but maybe the or almost the most important core of what you try to get your leaders, because you do a lot of leadership work, to understand, what is that?
I had to come to the realization when I had my near-death experience that everything is energy, and that when energy can work for you or against you, and the moment you're aligned with your true soul purpose, the things you love doing, your passion, your heart is all in, and then your mind is just staying in a positive state, that you can accomplish anything and do anything. And I had to learn that the hard way, and, you know, burning to the ashes and rise up. And I had to do that many times. But I think the power of being connected to the divine source and a positive mindset, I think that is what I have been learning and growing into. And it's what I talk with my leaders and company owners and founders with, is like, they're all focused on making money and building the business systems in place and new tech, and we have to hire new people. And I said, we have to do the energy work, because when you're aligned, things will flow and you attract the right people, and people that don't align with it will automatically resign and go away. You don't even need to fire them. So that's the work I do with founders and C-suite mostly, is going back to the energy work.
So when you say something like everything is energy, in the woo-woo space, and I don't mean that negatively, that we operate in, I do too, but in the weirdo space, we say that everything is energy. Talk a little bit about what that actually means, because I'm thinking of a founder that's got a business. Maybe it's bricks and mortar. Maybe they write code, or they sell widgets or do whatever. And, you know, they want somebody to help them grow the top line or overcome a dip in sales or loss of market share or a turnover problem they've got, personnel and so forth. How do we get from your central truth, which is everything is energy and it works best when we're aligned and heart and mind and all that jazz, to, yeah, but my balance sheet over here, like, how do you help me understand what you mean?
Yeah, that's the question I get a lot.
Good. Well, then you ought to be right ready to just dive in.
Yeah, so I tell them that your revenue, your balance sheet is the outcome and the result of you being aligned and in your power and doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And you have to grow and evolve to keep that going. And I tell them, you were doing really well when you were all in, 100%, and you were still passionate, you were loving what you're doing. And over time, a lot of owners, founders get a burnout because they just hustle and grind and they lose their passion. And it's just like a survival, or can I sell, or can I just, you know, they're exhausted. So I take them out of their environment and I take them on a 3-day mastermind or retreat or just, you know, reset. I said, step out of your world, because when you're in your own energy, you've been in the energy of your company with the same people and the same task and the same email and the same priorities and all the things that consume your time, energy, and money, you cannot grow and scale. So you get in the hamster wheel. You have to get out of the hamster wheel and just be in nature and just be free for a few days and feel what's most important to you, what is next for you, and then you get back your energy, like when you have high energy, lower stress, so you can make powerful decisions. It comes back to the decision-making. When people are scrambled and burned out, they make bad decisions. And so that's the energy of burnout that they drive into the organization. People feel it. Even if you can pretend you're great, they feel you're not. And that's the energy I talk about. It's like, it's not about what you tell me, but it's what I feel when I talk to you. They're two different things. And it's when that's not aligned, that's where the disconnect is and people just check out. And that's where your team is not producing or clients don't want to work with you anymore. They don't tell you. They just, you know, distract themselves on the conversation or the meeting or the business collaboration or how the clientele. They just move away.
They do. And you're 100% right. So the idea of, you know, there's several levels to talk about everything is energy. In fact, everything is energy, vibrating things, whether it's strings or quarks or whatever it is. Everything is that, and nothing that we see is really solid. It's all this stuff. I mean, you can go into the physics, but what you're really saying is the energy that I carry, and correct me if this is wrong, the energy that I carry in my business, in my decision-making, in the way I show up at work, in the way I talk to my people, in the way I hire people or correct them or align the ship or whatever it is, that energy is what carries both my intent and my effectiveness.
Right.
And if I don't have that in good shape so that I am aligned, and we're going to talk about what aligned is in a minute, then I can't do this very well. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Yeah.
So what does it mean to be aligned? You talked about heart and mind, and the name of the book is Undermined. What has to be aligned? Talk about really what that means so that somebody listening can get a sense of, okay, I understand what that is.
I think the easiest way to describe it is it's a feeling like our soul, that is an energy we cannot always describe, but it guides us. Like something feels right or it doesn't, for example. And then in our heart, there could be attached emotion to it. So we're either excited about it or we're like we're going into fear or stress, right? And then our mind is either going to talk us into it or out of it. So when you're aligned in a positive way, like you feel this is something is boiling off, something new you want to bring to the market or a shift you have to make, and you feel the excitement that that's the right thing, then you think, this is what I'm going to do. This is how we're going to do it. I want to work with these people. And you're excited and you put that action into work. So all the energies are aligned and then your actions are reflecting that. So when one of those is not part of the equation, so your soul, your heart, or your mind, it's not going to flow. And that's why I tell founders, like, you can have all your SOPs and all your tech and all your team working for you, but when you're not having that energy and clarity, it's still not going to flow. And that is the disconnect. They don't understand why is my revenue down, or why are people walking away from my company. I said, it's nothing to do that you don't have the right system or not a great product. It's that your energy feels disconnected from your company and your passion and your values and your vision. And so that has to come back. And sometimes the easiest thing is just step out it for 2-3 days and just reset yourself. And that's why I tell them you have to have a morning routine. You have to take care of yourself first. I'll say, after me, you come first. My wife knows that. My son knows that. My dog knows that. So.
I love that. And so we'll come back to the morning piece in a minute. But I heard you say soul, heart, and mind. Mm-hmm. And you talked about them a little bit differently. You talked about the mind in terms of talking in or out of stuff. And so that sounds like reason and language and good right. idea and bad idea. And you talked about heart in the context of emotion around things. And you talked about soul in a little less specific language, but the feelings, the intuition part. So, and you use your hands to move in front of your body like that. And so explain that a little bit. Is it somewhere in me?
It's all inside of you. Everything is inside of you.
Yeah, but my mind is here, more or less, and my heart is here.
And yeah, it's like the best way to describe it is underneath your belly button. It's like your intuition. It's your gut feeling on something. What's in the way or what's next or a feeling. It's an intuition, an energy. When you meet somebody, there is this natural attraction or repelling, like, no. And then your heart is filled with emotion with maybe a reflection of something that happened in the past. Doesn't need to be this person. Or there's this like, oh my gosh, this, I feel like this is my new best friend. And then your mind is going to go into like, now let's connect. Maybe we can do something. Or no, I don't even want to talk to this person. And you're going to push them away. It's how, for me, the energy works is like, I always tell people, your intuition already knows. Your gut knows what decision to make. Your emotion, mostly based out of experience of the past, is like the person, I got hurt doing this, so I'm not going to do it again. Although this is a new situation with a new person, you're going to protect yourself because you didn't heal that part. And then you talk yourself out, although maybe it's an incredible opportunity because your intuition said, yes, it's a great opportunity. This is what you should be doing. But then your pain and your emotion, I got screwed by somebody that looks exactly like this person. And then your mind says, we're not going to do it. And that's how you sometimes miss on incredible opportunities. And also the other way around, when your gut says, please don't do this. No, no, walk away. This is not it. And then your heart's like, I'm excited. There's an opportunity. I can make money. And then your mind says, you know, screw my gut. I'm going to do it anyway. And then shit hits the fan.
you know, it does. And I have to say, the first time you and I spoke some months ago now, I had that reaction. A positive one towards you. I listened to you talk about things and I heard the things that you believe and the things that you teach. And I experienced that sense of alignment. And so, you know, the opportunity to have you on the shows, just to talk some more to you, learn more about your story. And I even learned a little bit more about you just when we were in the green room, just before we started today, I had that sense of connection with you. So that was my experience in our first meeting as well.
That is the beauty. I think it's so powerful when you can trust your intuition. Not everybody has the feeling they can trust their intuition, but you can trust it. Then the key is to listen to it. And so when I talk to founders and CEOs and C-suites, they think I'm kind of different and weird. But after about, you know, a few hours talking to me or a few calls, or I'm sitting in their office for a day, they open up and I drive results and transform their business. So now they think it's like the weirdest thing because nobody really talks about it, but it's gonna work. I said, just trust me. You hire me for a reason. Let's do this. Nobody needs to know. Let's do the energy work, do some healing work. Let's get really clear. What do you want? And then when we're clear, then we will communicate. In the meantime, nobody needs to know what work we're doing. It doesn't need to be on, you know, on the broadcast to the whole office.
Right, right, right. So when you talk about hearing your intuition, I love that. And it's becoming way more mainstream to talk about intuition and nudges and all that sort of thing. But if a person, and I know many who downplay that, who don't trust it or don't believe it, or maybe they believe it's nonsense, or they've had bad experiences with someone who used those kinds of words. How do you teach me to hear, to begin to hear my intuition?
It is the getting out of your head, because when you're too prepared, when you go meet, let's say you go somewhere and meet new people, there is this automatic energetic field of attraction that the people you're automatically going to walk up to, because there is this, you know, their kindness in their face or the way they're dressed, or they're standing with somebody, you know, there is this attraction while you're going. And there's other people, there is not a natural attraction to talk to them. It's not because they're bad people, but they're just not your energy frequency. Like, I can go into a whole event and walk in a room and I will find my people. It's the energy will drive us into the same vortex of that room. And there's people that I just don't want in my energy field. It's not that because they're bad people, they're just not my people. You know, there are 8 billion people. That doesn't mean that I need to be connected and aligned and have a great conversation with 8 billion people, you know? And so I explain that, like, you have this natural feeling when you meet somebody. And you have to, when you just follow that, then you cannot really go wrong. But you have to trust that, because sometimes the outside looks like the perfect new business partner or the perfect hire. But when you're in, there's something telling you it's not right, then it's not right. And, you know, we try to find what is it. And sometimes you just have to let it go. You don't need to find what it is. Your intuition is telling you it's not the right person or not the right thing or not the right time. And just trust that your body knows before your intellect takes over and your mind and your experience, because you make decisions based off experiences, not off that moment of the feeling. So, you know, it depends on how much inner work you've done on healing the bad things that happen in your life, how likely you're going to trust your intuition.
Do you have people learn to meditate if they don't do that, be still and do that kind of work? Why is that? Here's what sparked this question. The first 5 books that I wrote in the library that I have written were a 5-volume series on meditation. And people often would ask me, you know, why do I need to learn to meditate? What's the point? Whatever. And I told them 2 things. I told them, 1, meditation isn't about learning to get good at meditation. It's about learning to direct your thinking, because we have such a frantic mind. And the other thing is, here's what meditation does, and this is in the context of that intuition. I teach him, look, first step is just be still, slow down enough to be where you are and when you are. So I'm here now, both temporally and physically, not thinking about yesterday or tomorrow. Slow down enough to be where you are. And step 2 is be still enough, which is different than slowing down, but be still enough to notice what is there. And step 3 is trust what comes to you is truth. And that were the 3 pieces. And it sounds like you were talking about learning that element of trust, that when things come to you, trust them as truth. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense. And I say the same thing, meditation, you know, you can put a lot of weight on it, but it's nothing more or less than being comfortable and quiet in solitude by yourself, you know? And I said, if you cannot do it in your own home, then go on a walk by yourself and go sit somewhere in nature, you know? And just let nature inspire you and just look at the birds or the sky or the smell, the flowers, whatever is around you. I love going to the beach in the morning and just sit there and look at the waves, the dolphins or birds or in dogs playing, like, and there's always things coming, sometimes big, sometimes like barely anything, but it doesn't matter. It's whatever comes is like, okay, that's truth. Otherwise it wouldn't come, right? I don't believe you get any messages that are not true. Like, now, it doesn't mean you always like them. That are 2 different things.
When you've got a company founder or leader that's facing a big, what they believe right now, at least, is a big decision, maybe some financial reversal has taken place, or, you know, AI has changed and done some things or whatever it is. And they present to you really uptight because they've been overthinking things and they're frantic and they're terrified of making a mistake because they view it as, you know, if I make a mistake, we're dead, it's catastrophic. And so they present in this heightened state. You talked about getting in nature and so forth. But when just walking around in the wilderness isn't enough, and they're just so focused on the gravity or the intensity of this decision, how do you help them create enough space in their own soul to realize it's okay to have some space right here? The universe isn't going to implode in the next 2 seconds or 2 hours or whatever it is, right? How do you help me do that if I'm just another situation like that? Might be a family dynamic, you know, there's a bad relationship thing and somebody's talking about divorce or, you know, whatever it is, what feels like a catastrophic thing. What do you do to help me clear that space you're talking about so the connection and alignment's even possible?
Yeah, if they still have to make the decision, right? If they already made the decision, now we have to do the emotional, you know, part of it. If they still are in the decision-making phase, I let them journal. I let them just write. I don't want them to talk. I want them to write. Because when things are in writing, there comes clarity, right? And I will ask questions if I have to. And most of the time, I will tell them, also read it out loud. And then I will tell them, if I were in your shoes, what would your advice be? And then, if it was you, then I would say, do this and this. I said, okay, then that's what we're going to do. And they're like, oh, but that didn't mean that. I said, no, but that's what you just wrote. And that's what you just told me. But it was never about me. So they get clarity by writing. I will ask questions. Then I let them read it out loud. And I said, okay, if this was advice for this, I was in your shoes, what would your advice be after everything you wrote and just share? My advice to you would to do this and this and this. Okay, then that's exactly what we're going to do.
I love that because people say all the time, well, I know how to help somebody else, like playing chess over someone else's shoulder, right? Yeah, just move this up here, rook to whatever, right? And you know, when you're not in the middle of it, it can seem really clear. And so I love that you have them do that and then discover their own clarity through that process of journaling. That's really good.
Because it has to be their idea. I cannot tell them what to do. Like I tell them, I'm not here to tell you what to do. We're going to discover together what's the best next step. And then we make a plan. And then you let me do the ugly and the dirty work. Don't worry about that. But I will take care of that. You just stay focused on where you want to go. But we need clarity first. Clarity is kind. If there's no clarity, we cannot make any decisions. But that is that being stuck in, I know what to do, but I don't know how or what's going to happen on the other side when I make this decision. So the fear of loss or the fear of, you know, sometimes are really, really big decisions. So that's.
When you just said, don't worry about the ugly work or the dirty work, what does that mean?
Sometimes I come in for a reorganization, restructuring, so they have to let go of a lot of people. Mm. So I will walk through and I look with them at the whole team and where they want to go and then if they're the right fit. And then I will do my little C-suite whisper part of who I am. And then I let them tell first who they want to keep and why. And then I will share with them what my findings were from walking around talking to the people. And I said, then we're going to share that there's going to be a restructure, reorganization, and that you hired me as an outside consultant to help with the process. And then we work out the packages and everything that they're going to get. I'm not involved in that. That's the legal part. But then I will be the one either together in the meeting or I will be the messenger. And then I will tell them why I am the messenger. And it's not because the owner doesn't want to do it. I said, because I'm the one doing it. Because then you can tell me everything you want to tell me. And I will be the broker that share and have your back and have this back. So there's not this bad energy when people break up, because the people that walk away from your business or get fired, they start talking negatively. So if you do this in a beautiful, powerful way, and like, hey, we're here to help you in the best way possible, then there is no hard feelings. And I tell also the founders and owners, like, you have to come with something that feels good when you walked away. And I tell them, when the door closes, another door opens. And right now you may be sad, but I'm telling you, in 2 weeks from now, this is the best thing that ever happened to you. And sometimes I even help them with my connections, said, hey, I know you're great. I think you fit way better there. And sometimes I do that too. But a lot of them come back to me and say, I give them my numbers. So let me know how I can help. They say, yeah, I found a way better opportunity. And yeah, you were right. The door closed, but the door had to close. Because sometimes people just stay because it's comfortable, but they're not happy. I tell them, you're not happy here. So this is a gift. So find your new path. And then it's a powerful conversation, a positive, high emotional intelligent conversation. So it's not like, here's your paperwork out of the door. That's so old fashioned, 1980s.
Right. That sure happened then. So if you think about not your whole career, but just because that's been some, you know, a lot of companies. But if you think about the last year or so, give us an example of one of these companies that you have helped that really stuck out in your mind, and obviously changed names and details, but something that you have you feel really good about. Going in, helping the founder owner find the new path, the new energy, reconnect with the vision and power. And
yeah, I have two really great stories from a small company and a really big company, and
good,
because they're different impacts. So a very small company doing around 3 million a year, a staffing company, and locally here in Orange County. And I met the founder at a party, and I talked to her. I didn't even tell her what I do. And we were talking about something that was coming up with the boys, because she has a 7-year-old, I have a 6-year-old. And okay, let's get them together. And then she texts me, can I talk to you? I said, of course. She says, you know, I have this challenge and I have the feeling I have to talk to you. Can you help me? And she shared, my business is not growing and I'm stuck. I don't know what to do. And I'm dealing with somebody on the team that is just not performing, but he has such a high pay and all this promises and nothing happens. Can you help me? I said, I can help you. So I came in, talked to the team separately after an hour. I dismissed the whole team and I talked to her. I said, this is what's happening in your organization. And we have to get rid of this person. She says, yeah, but I don't want to fire him because he's a partner, high pay, and we're in California. So, you know, I'm going to be sliced. I said, oh, no. Let me have a conversation with him and he will resign in less than a week. And she says, how are you going to do that? I said, don't worry about it. You don't need to worry about any of that. Let me handle it. So I had a conversation with him and I asked him a lot of, you know, deep questions about how's your business going? Can you show me your back office, your CRM? Who did you talk to? What are your clientele? What's lined up? Like, tell me. And how can I mentor you? How can I help you? What doors can I open for you? So I brought it in a whole open way. And he shared everything. And I said, you're doing nothing. Are you aware of that? You're costing this to the company. You're bringing in no revenue. You have a VP of sales. You have nothing in your back office. Now I have a 2-year-old daughter and I'm just really busy for her and I go to yoga in the morning. I said, yeah, in the meantime, you're getting paid a very, very nice paycheck, but that's not to go to yoga. So I said, okay, let's think about this and let me know how I can help you and just ramp things up so you actually can perform. 3 days later, he resigned. And he walked away because he knew there was no comeback. There was not something like, you know, he knew he was not performing. And that's the energy too. Like, I brought it in a positive way. Let me mentor you. What door can I open? He's gone.
Yeah, but you ask him. I'm interrupting because you ask him, you're not doing anything. He couldn't argue with that. And so you said, what do we need to do to ramp this up? Meaning so you can perform at the level that's somewhere near what you're getting paid to do, meaning multiples of that. Obviously, you're supposed to make a 2, 3, 4 times, 5 times multiple for the company of what you're getting paid all in. So that question alone would cause him to reflect, you know, what would actually have to happen to get him to perform at that level. So that was really good. Go ahead, keep going where you were, but I just noticed that.
Yeah, so then I told the founder, I said, one, we have to get you aligned. She was all over the place, like jumping bouncy ball, like, I said, we have to get you a little calmer space. Like, you don't need to be in every meeting. You don't need to pipe in everything. You have to stay focused. 30,000 feet is the owner. You do your job. You don't need to be in every email or every message in Slack and in Teams and please, you have to just let your managers run their departments and then once a week we come and meet and tackle the obstacles that are there. But you have to just step down and just focus differently. So we got everything aligned and team working. She grew, she hired new people, and then she did 8.9 million. And she said, like, I had no idea that by just letting go of that one person and me calming down and not being trying to be in everything and ruining the morale and the culture by being nah, 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 nah. So I mentored her through the whole thing and then I helped her open some doors, and she had an incredible year. So I'm still working with her on a mentorship basis to more keep her in place. The company's doing great. So this was a great experience. I like helping people getting results as fast as possible. So that was great. It was actually in a period of 7 months. So it was really good. And
That's
then
spectacular. 7 months, you helped her help that fellow realize that he didn't want to be there because
he
he
was
wasn't
gone
doing.
in 2 weeks after the whole period when I started and he left was only 2 weeks.
And so then in a few more months, you helped her create energetic alignment the way you talked about so that she was
Right.
operating from a place of integrity, high power, and not frantic because trying to be in everything, she can't do that anyway. So when
No.
you end up doing that kind of frantic work, you end up not doing any of it very well.
And that's why the company was not growing. It was actually going down. So I said, it's always goes back to you. So if we like it or not, but that's how it works. In my company, I know it's me. If things are not flowing, it's me. Like I have to just do a little mirror face myself moment in time. Like so that, and she was really grateful. Like I like to work with humble, grateful, people. And then another company, big company from Naperville, Chicago area, big real estate investing business, own about 70,000 apartments. And it's family owned, and they had some investors at the, in the C-suite. The owner is ready to retire. He wants to pass it on to his son, but this founder figure is basically like I described it as the Lion King, where it actually the throne has to go to the son and not to Mustafa. But Mustafa, the guy that was there, was in there trying to take over the business. So I sat down, mapped out, this is your story. Do you want to create the Lion King story, or do you want to create the story as it should be? So you have to have a hard conversation with your partner, and if you want to keep it the family business. So we prepared everything, and then they had a conversation, and I mitigated the conversations with the C-suite. There were several people at the top that were there for 30, 40 years, so they all wanted to retire. And I was mentoring the son to get ready to become the CEO, because that's a big step. He's in his 30s, late 30s, so running a very big, successful company. So I mentored him, and then the transition went actually really smooth with powerful conversations. Let the team left the ownership and brought in a new C-suite. The son is now running the company as a CEO, and they're doing really well. So I've been mentoring him for over a year. But just navigating the conversations and the partner, they found an exit plan and it all worked out. And they're all happy. In the beginning, he was not happy, the partner that had to leave. But now they're still friends, and he's actually very happy he left, and he's on a whole new adventure in the same, investing business, but totally different venture. And he got a really nice buyout, so it's not like it didn't hurt him that much. But it's sometimes the emotional attachment that is worth more than, the financial upside. So
How did that company in Chicago, you live in LA and they're in Naperville, how did they know to find you in California? What caused them to reach out to you?
they were clients in our tech company, and then they saw me speak at a conference, not related to tech, but about leadership and consulting and how to transform organizations by getting them aligned. And then he asked me if I want to go to dinner with him, and I had dinner, and he shared what's going on in his business and if I had any advice. I said, "No, it sounds like the Lion King to me." He said, I never thought of that, because that partner wanted to take over the company and steal the position from the son away so that he will be the big guy." And
I was just curious that so they came through your company, which was doing some tech work. It's just always interesting to me how those connections
But
get
they heard
made.
me speak at a conference where I was not speaking about our tech. or our AI. I was literally speaking about leadership and transformation of organizations. So then he said, I need to have dinner with you.
Oh, that's fabulous. So how often do you get invited to speak? It sounds like that's something you're really powerful at.
I'm a lot on podcasts. I'm getting invited to speak at mastermind groups a lot. So there's smaller groups, like 50 C-suites, entrepreneurs, business owners that do 7, 8, 9, 10 figures in a smaller setting. The bigger stages, maybe like 4 times a year at this point. My wife speaks almost every other weekend on a stage, but about our tech company. She's an incredible speaker. But it's growing.
I imagine you're a really good speaker. As I listen to you describe these things, I can imagine you're really good. So
I'm pretty engaging and funny, and I speak my truth. So I say a lot of one-liners that have those little impact, like zzz, zzz.
You know, I can believe that. So I was looking at the book ahead of time, and one of the things you talk about is embracing your voice. Yeah. And I want to talk about that specifically. And the reason voice means so much to Kellen is because, number one, I'm a singer, you know, I'm a vocalist. And number two, I've been blessed with the voice. And so I do the podcast and the radio thing and all that stuff.
Right.
But, you know, when Covey wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People all those years ago, one of the greatest leadership books, blah, blah, blah. Then later there was a book, I think done by his son, called The 8th Habit. You're familiar with that probably, right? And The 8th Habit is find your voice.
Right.
And so talk about this voice thing, both in the literal and the metaphorical sense. And it's interesting to me because I've also had as a guest on here, somebody who's in their 80s, who is a 50-year vocal, you know, performance maestro guy. And I've had a Hollywood A-list vocal coach that's been my coach for singing for a long time.
I think we know the same guy.
Do we?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. So, but the Hollywood vocal coach that I have is not this him. It's a different fellow that I've had for a long time. But talk about this finding your voice thing.
You know, I wrote in my book because I literally was not a speaker, a born speaker at all. Like, I'm an identical twin, and my sister was the more dominant speaker of the two of us. So she literally spoke for me most of my childhood. Meaning when people see us, like, oh, how are you? Like, in the English language, it's the same word. You is one person or many, right? Mm-hmm. In Dutch, there is actually 2 words for it, like when it's one person or two. So it was always like they were talking to us always like, how are you guys? Even when I was by myself, how are you, as like talking to 2 people. And it always annoyed the heck out of me. But my sister was way more like vocal about, oh, we're doing fine. Like, no, I'm doing fine. And she can tell how she's doing now. She said, no, we're fine.
Right.
And that carried on for a very long time. In our childhood, I had not the greatest emotional intelligent childhood, let me put it that way, with some vocal and you know, mental abuse on never good enough. So I became very quiet. I became a master observer of people, language, reading energy. That became my, you know, one of my skills later in life. What I'm grateful for now, back in the day, I hated it that I had no voice, but I had to find my voice. So when I went to the university in Amsterdam and my sister went to another university in The Hague, all both in the Netherlands, we finally were away from the same school system and I had my own circle. That's where I started to learn to have conversations and talk, and not talk in the we form, but in the I form.
Right.
And that was a big deal. Like, I was in my late teen, 18, 19, 20. And then I started to get a gist of it. And then when I was 23, I had my accident with 2 motorcycles and 6 months hospital and rehab for a very long time. And in that period of time, I started to do a lot of work, like spiritual work, emotional work, mental work, and really finding my voice. Who am I? What do I want to do? And how do I vocalize this? How do I give this energy in words, not just in my head, but actually speak to people about what I want instead of what my parents want or teachers or peers or friends or my twin sister? So I had to learn to find my voice, and then still it took a long time before I was ready to even say something in front of a room. Even as an executive, I didn't like it to necessarily get the mic. But I had to learn that skill, and I did it a lot. So I just, you know, learned to be comfortable what people think, how they're looking at me, what they're gonna say or think or judge. I just learned over time that it really didn't matter, that I will say the right thing to the right people and the message will come across and not everybody's gonna like, and then that's okay. So it took me a long time, but the past 10 years I've been speaking on stage and on podcasts and interviews, and you know, it's comes very natural now, but that was a long journey. That was not an overnight success.
Thank you for sharing that. And I have two things I want to follow up on. One is the practical aspect of learning something. Like when you're going into a company and you're teaching them to be aligned, you're teaching them something about listening to the you know, the soul and the heart and the mind and what alignment looks like and feels like and how they feel when that's true and how they feel when it's not true, so they can learn to hear that themselves. And they don't they don't learn that in a microsecond. Right?
No.
It's not something that's instant. It's something that takes practice. And we live today in a world that's sort of download and double click. We think if everything doesn't happen like right now, or at most in the length of a TV sitcom, that something's wrong. And if we don't find the answer. So talk about that. You know, you just said that really quickly. I want you to talk about and give some encouragement and maybe some advice about people, to me, to all of our listeners, about the willingness to go through the process of learning a skill, whether it's alignment or, in your case, it was speaking for the reasons you said. Talk about that willingness to be in the process.
You know, that's, I think, the hardest part for us humans, because what we want it now, right?
Well, we've certainly been trained.
We wanted it yesterday, you know?
Yeah, we've certainly been trained to have that everything right now, yeah.
You know, especially when things are not going the way you want it to go, right? When you're in a situation like the revenue is not coming or your relationship is not going well, whatever's happening in your life, you want it solved now. But you have to trust the process. And I think that's the hardest part of the whole journey of entrepreneurship and even life, that everything has its divine timing, and that you can manipulate in a positive way the process, but that only can happen when you have faith that the right thing will happen, and that when a door closes, another one will open. And when you make a decision, that is the best decision you can make today. Otherwise, you would have made another decision. And then you can just make another decision to turn it around. It's not like a straight line to the finish line. We all know that there's many ways to get there, and there are many obstacles. It's part of the journey. And I tell them, it's not the end of your life when you make this decision and it turns out not to be the right decision. It's not the end of life, you know? And the process itself is the hardest, and the process is different for everyone. It's not like a script or a fine-tuned step-by-step plan that works for everybody the same. But it comes to the awareness that it's okay to be quiet, and you don't need to decide right now. Tell people, I need a week. I need time for myself. I need to reflect. I need to observe. I need to listen. I need to whatever you need to talk, do. Like, there's no need to make a decision today. And that's the pressure we have. Like, the same if somebody texts me and I don't text them in 5 minutes back. Like, I texted you, hello. Like, it's hello, question mark. Like, hello, I'm in a meeting. You're not a priority for me, right? Nobody's dying. And if you're dying, I'm going to be like late anyway. So why do I need to reply right now? It's this urgency from the outside world that pushes us to just do things right now. And I try to tell people all the time, you don't have to do it right now. And where is that? It's your insecurities or your own pressure that you have to do that. And I think that's a big one. Being okay with a pause, literally a pause, and tell people, I'm not ready to make a decision, so give me space and time, and I'll let you know when I'm ready. You know, it's and that's a journey, because most people fill up the space with talking and doing and not being quiet and listening, and just take time to just sit with it. Because the answer will come, but it will never come in the noise. The answer comes when you just So around that's why a lot of people lay awake at night overthinking all their problems and processes and things that need to be done.
Well, the very fact that people lay awake at night overthinking, and that's a common epidemic, illustrates the truth of what you've said. And I'm reminded of Miles Davis, the jazz trumpeter, who it was said, you know, he could do more with space than most people could do with a ton of notes. And if you don't do jazz, not you, but you listeners, you don't know that. But, you know, that was Miles, you know, and his trumpet playing. And you're right. Let there be space, because that is where you hear and feel that, sense that alignment and hear that intuition. And so that's a very important teaching that you've given us here almost at the tail end. And thank you for that. I want to ask you one more question. You briefly referenced an accident that set you on a journey of healing and growth and intuition. And we've only got a few minutes, 3 or 4 minutes left. But I want you to, you don't have to describe whatever detail you want, but what drove you to look inward instead of be bitter about an accident or all the other things that you could have? What caused you to then go on the path? Because look what you've turned into, this amazing energy and rich person to help people. So what happened to make that real?
Well, it happened was two near-death experiences, because otherwise I would not have been here. I'm pretty sure about that. Because when I went in my near-death experience and I saw the other side, I was totally happy to stay there.
Right.
But yeah, the message was really clear that it was not my time. And I had something bigger to do this lifetime. And of course, I had to be alive to do so. And it gave me clarity in the message in it. I actually was here to do something bigger than myself. And it's the first time I heard that message in my whole lifetime. And then I had a second near-death experience where I literally met this beautiful, impressive Native American tribal leader with this feather headpiece. And he hands me a big feather with a key on it. And he says, "You're here to empower mostly women or high emotional intelligent men to step into their power and life purpose at a young age. And don't wait for an accident or divorce or bankruptcy or heart attack or all those things we know that can happen over time. And you will get the insights on your path." Like, and that was it. And like, okay, now at least I knew why I was here, because I was lost. Like, I didn't know, why am I here? Like, I really didn't want to live. So it was like, but I got that clarity and like, okay, that gives me something to work with. And now I know why I'm here and I have, you know, that gift to do so. And of course, the journey to get ready to do my work, I put a lot of work in my personal development, spiritual work, emotional healing, mental toughness, you know, getting physical back up my feet, literally. And listening to my intuition. And because a lot of judgment around me, you should not do that. And that's not that. And just get a 9-to-5 job. And, you know, I'm the first and only entrepreneur in my family. One of my cousins became an entrepreneur later. He followed me, but literally the first one. And everybody's like, my dad worked for the government for 40 years. Like, well, you just said, get a job. And I'd rather not make for a 9-to-5 job. And I came to the realization. So, yeah.
You know, interestingly enough, you said something again about the process, and we don't have time. We did that a little bit more in the other show. So if you want to know more, go listen to the other one. But you again talked about being willing to go through an extended process of things. You mentioned mental toughness and spiritual development and physical rehab and a bunch of other things. So if people want to find out more about you or have you come and speak or something, where do they need to go to get a little another dose of your wisdom?
They can either go to my website, estherwoldenburg.com, very simple, just my name, or on LinkedIn. That's the best way to connect with me.
Esther, Estherwildenberg, Esther Wildenberg in Dutch, .com. And so go there. Like, really, she's the real deal. And the things that she's shared with you are not just interesting ideas. They're battle-tested, real-life, experience-backed truths that you listeners each have the ability to access. Esther, I want to thank you for sharing, again, different aspects of your development, your journey, your love, your passion, your heart, and what you are called to do in the world. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
My listeners, I want you to take this seriously. I have a lot of guests, not every week, but nearly every week. We have amazing people that have done all kinds of stuff. And you know that because you followed the show. And Esther is no different. Her book, The Undermined Soul, is worth reading. And there's her story is in here if you want more details. But the principles that she has spent time learning and discovering and refining with her own wit, and, you know, she's a good speaker. I really enjoy listening and having this conversation with her. So I would encourage you to listen again to the show and check out what you have here, because you do have an opportunity to grow, to learn, and to be closer, to have the tools to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.